listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Carulla. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special guest, the producer for a new psychotic detective film called Healing Towers. It's available on Tubi. We're going to play the trailer, but we're going to talk a little bit with producer extraordinaire Andrea Leonelli. Did I say your name correctly?
You got it. Thank you.
You definitely are a full-blooded Italian with a name like that.
I'm full-blooded American.
Well, okay. Well, Leonelli is a very Italian name, so that's why.
Yes, it is.
So let's we're going to talk about this movie in detail, but first, let's go back to the very first moment of zen that you had to like get involved with film, to be a producer. What was the moment of zen that made you want to be involved with film?
I've been in the film business since I was very young. Most people know me because I was a supermodel back in New York back in the 80s.
Awesome. That's amazing.
So, I've been around this industry for many, many, many decades, and I got out of it because I had a family and that, but, I got back into it because I really had been working on, documentaries and human rights. And we really, really saw the abuse that was happening to homeless people and mental illness. And we decided that it wasn't going to work as a documentary. And believe it or not, there's a big audience that really love these thriller movies. And I've watched more and more and more of them. And I realize it's really entertaining. And I love the pacing of these thriller type movies.
Totally.
And all of a sudden, it's fun. I mean, a lot of people get scared watching the movies, but it's fun making horror movies. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, because you have excellent makeup, and then you also have a great story that's going to pull the audience in. And it's always what I love about a thriller or horror film. It's like, you know, it's always going to have you on the edge of your seat. And there's so many films that don't do that. So I love that genre of film because it's always going to get my attention because it's going to get your adrenaline pumping.
Well, I can't ruin it because there is a major, major twist in this movie. And so I will not give it away. But I will tell you that there is a detective that's searching for his missing daughter. That much I will tell you. I won't tell you what happens, though.
And was there something that drew you to the script, to the cast, to the director?
You know, it's one of those things that everything seemed to fall into place. And most of the people that I worked with are all real professionals. And again, I'd always been on the front of the camera. So for me to work behind the camera was just such a humbling experience. I mean, what you guys do with audio and sets and design and makeup, and to see everybody on the back end working just to get this one frame is just phenomenal. And I love the magic of that. And you know, but this film, we really wanted, like I said, we really wanted to get the message out about the abuse of homeless people. It's you're in LA. I mean, I live in LA.
Yes.
I'm not in LA right now. I'm on the East Coast right now. But, you know, if people need to know that, you know, mental institutions and prisons, I mean, it's a horror movie in itself.
Right.
And
it's also like how they treat the people that are on the streets and how they're treating mental disorders and the whole thing is it's become a business. So it's also like this super corrupt part of society that nobody knows is they're being, you know, they're putting money into these parts of, you know, society, and they're not doing it in the ways that are kind of like bringing these people back into society in a healthy way. And that's really sad. That's the crime of the whole thing, I think, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, I do tell people, I am willing to say I'm sober 40 years.
And oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And people go, well, and I go, you know, I couldn't have done it if I really hadn't had love and a support around me. It wasn't about giving me medication. It was about having support and compassion and understanding around me for me to, you know, be vulnerable and make mistakes.
Right.
And that's what really helps build people's self-esteem, is having that support group that allows us to be human.
Yeah.
So it's, but it's amazing how many people that have substance abuse issues are, we're really finding out how many traumas they have.
I was just about to say that. I'm actually sober 24 years. Oh, so I don't have as many as you, but you know what? It is related to trauma. And it's like a lot of people don't talk about, like, and it's really kind of like sad traumas that happen when they're kids or when they're teens. And it's like when they're in these developmental years that it just derails them, and they don't know how to channel it in any other way other than, you know, substances, because that's also the coming of age, like as you're kind of getting into parting with friends or in the industries or whatever it is. It's all around. So it's like, it's a way to kind of like shield a lot of that pain, and it's not the healthiest. So, you know, I think a lot of people that are homeless deal with that. And also there's a madness of the mind too, that they also go through, that there's very little compassion. There's a lot of judgmental parts of society that look down on anybody that's homeless. So they don't understand that, like, there's so many mental health disorders, traumas, addictions, and, it, you know, these people need a chance to kind of reintegrate into society. So I love that you're taking a lot of these kind of scopes on this, because I share your vision completely.
Yeah, we actually, this movie, the doctor has these homeless people act out their worst traumas.
Wow.
And it's violent. I mean, I will say it's gory, and it's a little more gory than I wanted it to be, but it's also what the audiences love. And so there's always, you know, when you're trying to market, you want to get your message out, but you also want to get your audience to also be entertained. So it's a fine line, but I mean, you know, just a boring documentary on addiction just doesn't work anymore.
Right. And it's a shame, because it's like it turns people off, because it can get preachy, or it can get, you know, whatever it is. And it's not meant to do that, but it's, I think a good story can hit people almost, you know, in a much deeper way.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually sometimes it's I think people watch it and they're like, wow. You know, they don't even, because a lot of people are watching it for entertainment reasons, and they're like, but they also get the message that there's a mental health issue going on.
Right.
So it works both ways, you know. Right. And I hope we get the opportunity to even do sequels. I mean, it has a lot of potentials with the doctor going in other directions or going to other places. And we kind of left that open in the end, where he escapes, he gets away, and okay, and that's not the spoiler alert, but I didn't give it away, but he does end up talking to somebody that does let him escape. So we don't know where the doctor goes. So there is we kind of left that open for a sequel. So we're hoping people. Because so far the reviews that we're getting is more about the insanity of this doctor and the kind of treatment that he's putting these people on. So I mean, you got to watch it, because I mean, it's mind-boggling that the way he's come up with these, and the writers and Billy McNamara, who's our lead actor, is just such a seasoned professional, just such a pleasure to work with. I mean, and he was just really, really into the character. And most of our reviews are about how this doctor is insane. And I really, truly believe people will want to see more of him.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask you, because most great artists that are in front of the camera also turn out to be great artists behind the camera. So I wanted to ask you, like, how did that influence what you wanted to take on, what you kind of wanted to, you know, see in your actors, or what you wanted to see, like, on the whole? Did you kind of feel like you had to stay in your lane a little bit more as a producer, or did you kind of feel like your experience in front of the camera helps you to be a better producer?
Well, you know, what am I going to say? I mean, I was a successful businesswoman in South Central for 20 years. But I'll tell you, working with actors and the creative part of all their creativity and cameramen, I mean, somebody said to me, they said, how do you handle it? 10 people yelling at you all the time. And you'll like this one. So I go, No, it's not the 10 that are yelling at me. It's the one that's not.
Right.
Then I'm like going, well, why is it? Because you're everybody's running around and freaking out and trying to get stuff done. And, you know, we're trying to, because, you know, you've got a shot list going all day long. Right. And like, oh my God, we're behind. We got to get this one set up. And it's like, where, you know, and it's always the one you can't find that's fucking off.
And you know what's funny is, you know, I'm a musician, so I played at Sundance a lot, and you know, I'm directing a YouTube series, so it's like I fell in love with film way before Sundance. But when I went to Sundance and I played all those years, I got to meet so many filmmakers, I got to see so many indie films, and I just fell in love with storytelling. And you know, the one thing I learned was, you know, just the fact that a movie got finished is the greatest reward, and that is the biggest and hardest thing to get accomplished. Yeah. What was that feeling like when you knew you had it wrapped, you had it edited, you had it finished, it was in the can? That must have been a moment that was kind of one of the most thrilling parts of the whole journey.
Well, you know, I have to give my director just major accolades. Suja Paul is so talented in every area. He plays a small role in the movie. He's the detective's boss, but awesome. He also wrote it.
Hitchcock in there.
Yeah. Well, we actually on our budget, we couldn't find anybody else that we liked, so he had to kind of take it on.
And you didn't want to be the boss?
Oh no. But you know, I will tell you, to see how talented people are today with the technology and the AI, to be able to edit right on your laptop and do sound, and to have it do sound, and it's just amazing what I think the kids of the next generation are going to be able to do. It really is going to come down to the storytelling. Because you don't have to have the big editing rooms and sound rooms and the big studios. You don't need all that big stuff. I mean, it is becoming a tech industry now. You know, I really think it's going to get focused on who can really tell the best stories now.
Right.
And you have
to streamline it too, because like budgets are hard to come by, so you have to kind of scale the movie a certain way. How many cameras shot the film, and how long did it take?
Well, you know, again, you're absolutely right. We got done on time and on budget.
Wow. Yeah. That's a feat in and of itself.
Well, like I said, Suja was able to because he's a writer, he was able to rewrite things right on set to fit the budget. And you're absolutely right. I've heard so many horror stories of independent films that they couldn't dance on their feet. And being in the industry so long, and as a kid, I mean, I had a production company in San Francisco. I was with Wilhelmina in New York. I mean, and, you know, one of the things they always teach you as a professional is basically you got to dance on your feet. And if you can't adjust all day long, you know, you're going to end up with nothing in the can.
Right.
And we really, really pushed people. I can't say that we ended up with a lot of fans. I mean, I would say all of our actors were super, super professional and understood the strain that we were in and really worked to make sure that we got what we needed.
That's amazing. And, you know, like, it's kind of like a guerrilla style of, you know, kind of putting the piece of art together. How big was the cast? How many cameras did you shoot? And how many days for the whole shoot did you do?
You know, we only had one camera. For some reason, they didn't want to do two cameras. And we adjusted to that. We shot at 1, 2, 3, 4 locations, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. And we found this really cool bunker down in East Los Angeles that.
Awesome.
And that's the torture room. I mean, the treatment room. Sorry.
you let the cat out of the bag. We know what it is now.
No. That's still not the cliffhanger.
Wow. That's amazing. So did you have to scout locations? Did you have a scout on hand? Like, how did that work?
Again, we knew kind of, it was kind of really, really funky because one of the reasons this movie even came about was that Suja was working in one of the buildings down in by MacArthur Park, this really creepy old Hollywood building that had and you'll see it in the movie, it's got the boiler room and it's got the creaky old wooden elevator. And it just fed right into this creepy clinic that was treating people. You can't say torturing people, but you know. But yeah, I mean, people were getting killed and disappearing, and and it just really lent to that whole feeling that really. And then finding the bunker in East Los Angeles was just, again, just creepy. It just fit the whole building and part of it, the whole era of that whole old Hollywood. So it was just things awesome. Really fell into place. Yeah.
And how was it easy to light it? Was it easy to kind of capture the audio? Because that's always another part of filmmaking that people don't understand that I've learned, you know, it's just so important. It's like, that's the triangle, right? That's the trifecta.
You know, I will tell you, all of our actors were very professional. I mean, and they all knew how to wear the lathe and we, you know, so they were all mic'd and the boom operator was great. We got a lot of shots that, I mean, of course, in editing, you can edit out the boom or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, we really got everything we needed. And I think it's because we worked with people that all knew what they were doing. You know, these weren't, we had a couple young kids on the gaffers. But, you know, other than that, everybody knew what they needed to do. All the actors were just great. I mean, Mark Tillman did our casting. He used to do casting for Paramount for years. So everybody he put in there knew where they needed to be, knew where their lighting was, already knew what was going on. So it wasn't like, it's definitely very professional.
That's awesome. And you know, what's cool is you use people that had the experience with the studios, and what's happening now in films, you know, a lot of these studios are getting smaller, they're shrinking, and they're letting people that are really great go, or that people are leaving, and they're finding their homes in these indie projects where it's like, now it elevates the indie project. So I'm sure some of his experience with casting helped to elevate the ensemble. And did you guys do table reads and all of that, you know, to get the process going?
You know, we really didn't have time. Andrew Keegan, who is our other lead, he's the detective in the story. We did do a table read. So that really was just got everybody more knowing each other. So, but Billy wasn't even town. So, I mean, but again, like Suja was really great at letting Billy McNamara do improvising and that. But he really, really understood the insanity of this doctor. So
right.
It's really a fine line between this doctor that thinks he's brilliant, but obviously he's a serial killer.
Right.
No. That's not the cliffhanger.
This is a great way to sell the film for sure.
No, you're not going to get me to give it away. Such a great hook at the end of the movie, and it's so worth seeing it because it brings it all around into a lot of hope and love. So I mean,
giving any cliffhangers away. Was there a scene that stood out that you were on set for that kind of either took your breath away or kind of like gave you the chills? Like, was there a moment or several moments like that for you?
There's one scene that is between the nurse and one of the patients, Jeremy, and she's supposed to kill him, and she just can't. And you know, she's supposed to be one of Dr. Healer's proteges, but she can't because there's this humanness to her. So I liked that part of, you know, the good and the evil, that you know she can't do it, you know, even though she wants to do what Dr. Healer wants her to do, but she just has too much compassion for humanity, for human, you know. So I love that kind of, you know, really struggle when an actor really has to struggle like that for the good and evil. So that really, really is the part of the humanness that I love.
That's awesome. And how many days did you shoot all together? Do you remember?
We only shot, we shot the end of 23. It was during right at the end of the strike.
Wow.
And, a couple of the actors we got because of the strike. And so we had to shoot before, and then the strike was coming to an end at the end of 23. And so we only shot, I think it was maybe 15 days.
Wow.
And we did have to come back. It was the day before Thanksgiving. We gave people Thanksgiving Day off, and we had to do a couple pickups the day after Thanksgiving.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome, though. That's exciting for, I'm sure, all the cast just to stay working during that time, too.
You know, it was really, and I tell everybody, I go, you've got to be willing to also be professional. And that means making some tough decisions, cutting some shots, cutting things out, readjusting. And that's really where I think Suja and Harrison, the other producer, and I stayed strong, because we all come from a business background also. So I'm really got a good chunk of humble pie realizing what it takes to be professional too.
Right.
I mean, we'd all love to just have creative freedom to work on one shot a day.
Right. And not a reality.
It ain't going to happen now.
Right. Well, it's like, there's a part of art where it's like, you want it to keep moving. You know, it's like I'm directing and producing this YouTube series right now where it's usually a three camera shoot, and we put a band, you know, with a special guest in a studio, and I could literally spend all day doing the same song. Like, we could do 20 takes easily. But you don't have that luxury. We have to do 5 or 6 songs in an episode. Yeah. We have 6 hours to do it all. So we're kind of moving along pretty fast, and we're trying to do it in like 2 or 3 takes usually. Sometimes it goes to 4 takes. But how many takes did you guys have the luxury of? And then how did you know, okay, we need to move this along because we're doing too many, or we're you're pacing it at the right place? How did you kind of gauge the pacing of it?
I think all the actors came really, really prepared. We used a software called Studio Binder. Again, what's coming out? I mean, you put the film in and you get your shot list out every day.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, and I don't think we even bought it. We rented it for a month.
Amazing. Well, that's the way you got to do it. Guerrilla style, you know, you got to streamline it any way you can, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we moved locations, literally, the poor crew. I mean, we were using even my SUV. I mean, it was like we were just moving. Like at night, they would break set, and in the morning, they're up, and then the cast is over. That whoever was on the call list that morning is over at the new location, and I mean, everybody really moved. I can't think of the only complaint I got was about once. I think I got about what color Gatorade I had on the craft table.
That's awesome. At least you had Gatorade on the craft table. You know what I mean? That's important. That means you run a tight ship, and that's not easy to do with that many people. How many people total were in the cast?
The cast and crew, I think we totaled, I'm going to say, because we had some flashback scenes. So we had, young Dr. Healer. We had, so we had some kids. And then, of course, you have to have their parents because they're minors. And then I'm going to say, I don't think we had more than 40.
Wow. Yeah. That is really streamlined.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's tremendous. That's great. Yeah. And everybody worked like pretty much the crew, same crew for all the days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you said it was about 15 days total.
Yep. That was it.
That's incredible. What were your hours like? You had to go into overtime at some point.
Well, again, we were non-union and, okay. So we did, and we told them that up front that it was, we needed to get through the shot list. But right. So I would say we mostly did, I'm going to say probably close to 12-hour days.
Wow.
And then we had
on the crew for sure.
Yeah. Then we had to go back and we didn't have time to look at dailies, obviously. But we had to go back that night and then make sure we had the call list out. And that was one thing that our casting guy was really pushed us on. And I'm glad, again, just to be professional, we had to really get the call list out by, I think he wanted it out by 6 p.m. for the next day. And but again, you kind of like, okay. But, in the long run, you do appreciate that, that somebody's kicking the tires and keeping it on track too.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, that most people don't recognize is how many external hard drives did you guys have to have for, like, do you remember what you shot it on? And because, like, I've learned so much as to what cameras you can use and what external hard drives are going to be able to be compatible as far as how much footage you have.
We were backing up every night.
Wow.
Yeah, we were backing up every night. Somebody was backing up. I mean, we had a guy that was just sitting there backing up onto hard drive every night. And I have a hard drive in my safe.
Smart.
Yeah. Smart. I mean, always one offsite while he's one in with the director, one with, you never know. So you've always got all your footage somewhere. And the one thing let's not forget the magic. I mean, we shot in 15 days, but again, like I think film magic happened in post-production.
Right.
And that's when you really get to put, again, Suja did the first edit and got it to about 2.5 hours. I mean, we probably had close to 12 hours of footage.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and got it down to about 2.5 hours. And then we needed a real editor just to really clean it up. Because you even kind of lose objectivity because you look at it so many times. And but when you really think about and the actors were great. If there was a couple lines that needed, they could actually – we were just talking – the director and I were just talking about this yesterday – how you could actually even have an actor go, hey, you know what? I need this pickup line. They can do it on their cell phone and send it to you.
That's crazy.
You think about, how before you used to have to go to a studio, be in a sound booth. I mean, it's phenomenal how fast the kids can do stuff now. That's where I go.
Especially with AI, it can make up the artifacts that it needs for audio and just compressing it the right way. It's crazy. It's super crazy.
Well, but the industry is still trying to limit audio, especially with like yours and my voice.
Right.
You know, they
right.
still want to, and our images, you know, I mean, it's still got to be real. You
yes,
know?
I agree. Mean,
yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because people, I go, you know, AI just is too perfect.
Right.
Isn't it wonderful that we as humans are so fucked up?
We're perfectly flawed. That's what I like to say. We're perfectly flawed.
Perfectly what?
Perfectly flawed. Perfectly.
Perfectly flawed. Okay. I'm going to use that one. Yeah. It's still an F word.
Right. That's right. Well, let's play this trailer. Let's play this trailer and we'll talk about it.
Cool.
Here's the trailer for Healing Towers.
I'm sorry. Please don't hurt me.
Are you ready to heal?
I look after the most underrepresented patients.
Moving here, I feel very safe.
You are in a safe zone.
These are all the men and women who have gone missing in the last decade.
I'm not going anywhere until I find my daughter.
This could be life and death.
You know, it's funny. I remember living in Healing Towers, but I don't remember anything about my treatment.
The medicine that I gave you makes you dream.
The line between
dreams and reality gets blurrier as the therapy intensifies.
You are in a dream, and you can do whatever you want.
I can do whatever I want?
Yes, that is the therapy. This dream will heal you.
You must hurt her like she hurt you.
Do what you want to her! Get even!
This is my daughter's.
Where is she? Where's Casey?
You're sick!
Nope. I'm not. I'm a healer. This is how we bring peace to troubled minds.
Wow, that is awesome. That gets you just on the edge of your seat already from the trailer. How did you know how to cut the trailer? Because that, I think that's an art in and of itself.
Like I said, you know, Suja was the writer, director, and did the first edit. So it's really about telling the story. And he's a phenomenal storyteller. And in fact, he has another movie on Tubi. I think it's running on Tubi now called Tie the Knot, which is a multicultural crossover romantic comedy. I know. How do you go from doing that to doing
Wow, you got to switch hats real quick. You got to make sure you're all about the love and then all about to scare the shit out of people all in the same.
No, I mean, this Dr. Healer really believes in his therapy. He's a world-renowned doctor. He's written books. People really, really think that he is, and he has successful people that are doing phenomenal things that he's helped convert into. But now in this movie, his therapy gets exposed. Nobody's ever seen how he does it and how he allows his patients to act out their traumas.
That's crazy.
And that's still not the spoiler alert.
So if you shot this on one camera, I saw a lot of scenes where you had to probably shoot the same scene 4, 7, 10 times to get the right take. How many takes did you have per scene, do you think?
No, I would say there's definitely the wide POV. Then there's, if it's a two-person scene, there's his POV, then her POV. So you're over one person's shoulder, over the other person's shoulder. And then there might be an insert shot. So it really, you know, it's pretty, you know, I mean, that's pretty much what we kept it to.
Smart. I mean, it's kind of amazing, too, that it's done with one camera because it doesn't look like it. You know, it's
we wanted to use another one. And for some reason, I forget, you know, I wasn't in that decision making process. So I don't know why they decided to go only one.
to tell you.
Well, sometimes it's you know, maybe it's the cameraman. Maybe it's like finding somebody that's going to share the vision of the director. That's part of it too. You know, maybe it could be something like that. You just never know. It's hard. It's hard to base it on.
But you saw, I mean, there's kind of an austerness and coldness, and we wanted to keep that. I mean, you know, you see the rooms are, there's almost a cold gray tone.
Yeah.
And I think he felt, the cameraman felt he had to capture that austerness with one camera. Yeah.
Well, it did the trick because, I mean, the trailer was great. The trailer, I mean, that could pull anybody in just by looking at it. So, I mean, it's impressive that you guys did it so streamlined, but it still looks like it can compete with anything 10 times the budget. You know, that, do you remember what you shot it on? Was it shot in like 8K?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. I know it was a really great camera, but I can't remember the name of it. I know you're good. Yeah.
Filmmakers use the Reds or the Black Magics.
Something like that. Yeah. I think it was, yeah. Black Magic, yeah.
That's what I learned. Like, when I've shot on that, it's like the external hard drives are gigantic. They're just like huge. They look like giant speakers. You know, it's crazy. It's awesome. How did this make you feel as far as taking on another film project? Did it make you want to jump right in, or did it make you say, give me some time to like marinate on how we go about it the second time? Like, what did you learn in this first time? This film that will help you for the next film.
Again, if it wasn't for social media, I don't think independent filmmakers would have a chance. I mean, there's no way that we could compete with these big studios that are blowing out commercials and billboards. And, you know, we as independent filmmakers, all we can do is really pound social media.
Right.
And hopefully get on talk shows and get on and get on radio shows and just keep talking about it.
Yep, you know? Absolutely. And,
yeah, and that, even our distributor, who I think has, you know, gotten us a couple got us on Tubi. So yeah. Hey, yay, got us. We were on Amazon VOD for a while, which was good, and we got enough VOD that we got to Tubi, which, you know, hopefully. Is doing well for independence. Again, it's doing well.
Tubi is like the independent filmmakers' mecca, which I love that it exists, because distribution and major distribution is almost becoming outdated, and things like Tubi are the new YouTubes, they're the new Amazons,
they're
the new Netflix, and they need to be what they are, and it's so great to find like a home for indie films, because that's what indie filmmakers need. It's like, it's really, you just need a place that where people start buzzing about it, that they start wanting to find your film, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of kids are liking Tubi because it's free.
Right.
But also because, again, independent filmmakers, I got to tell it, we're more real. We don't have these polished studio, glitzy, big, you know, computer generated, you know, CG, AI. It's real storytelling.
Yep.
You know, we don't have that. We don't have
on that platform, you know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, the kids can see that it's real. The actors are real. And that's what's getting all the TikTok views too, is the real stuff.
Yep.
People like seeing real stuff. And I go, this is really believable. This could have, this could be happening right now in this building down in LA. This clinic could be happening, and this could be going on. That's what makes it so scary.
Well, the other thing too, I find in this newer generation, is they don't really want the mass marketed film. Like, they are finding things on YouTube, finding things on TikTok, finding things on Instagram, finding things on Tubi. And it's like, that is where they spend most of their time, because the heavily marketed stuff, they feel like, oh, I can think for myself. I can find the movies I want, which is important.
But that's where, like, the director and me, the producer, that's where, I mean, they can see we put our blood, sweat, and tears into these movies.
Right.
That we worked our butts off for these movies. And I mean, and they see that it was a labor of passion. You know, we really believed in this project, and we really got it done.
Let me ask you, did you kind of work the film festival circuit? Like, how did that serve you? How did it not serve you? Because I have my opinions about it, because I kind of pushed an animated short, and you see how commercial and kind of it's very hard to get into these bigger film festivals, no matter the content, because there's a lot of people being greased one way or another. There's a lot of like big corporations that are controlling who gets into what, or movie houses that are controlling who gets into what. So how did you guys kind of feel the film festival circuit served your film?
Again, because of social media, because of all the avenues that we have, we can get as much exposure out there as a film festival.
That's awesome.
And we did. We got markets in South America. We got markets,
wow,
you know, in a few in Europe already. And like I said, we've already been on Amazon and been on Google Play, and now we're on Tubi. And I'm like, isn't that why you go to the film festival?
Right. That's
so
great.
So if you can't get on the, if you can't get just your, you know, those streaming services to pick you up, then maybe I would have gone back to the film festivals. And who knows, maybe now that we're getting recognized, you know, and we're getting good recognition on Tubi and VOD, maybe I will go back to Cannes and see if I can pick up some bigger guys and bigger markets. Because, you know, a lot of the, like Cannes, there still are a lot of big European markets that go there.
Right.
So, in like, I don't know who the distributors are or who the markets that are actually purchasing, have purchase power that go to Sundance. I mean, so if you know a European market, there's going to be, you know, buyers from those markets. Yeah, you want to go see if you can meet a couple of them and get them to watch your film. Yeah.
Well, and it's also like I've learned there's the American Film Festival, there's Sundance, there's Cannes, there's so many, South by Southwest too. But it's all about finding these, like, these independent, you know, film lovers that are chasing stories, not, you know, chasing the next commercial thing. Because that's, you know, I think it's a dying thing for a major league pushed and promoted film that's on a major film house to kind of make waves in a film festival or make waves to buyers, because they already know those lanes are already kind of occupied. So it's like when you find those buyers that are like independent film fanatics and lovers of film and stories and real stories, that's when you find like, oh, this has a lane of its own and it has a market of its own. And I hope that more buyers get into those markets because they're important. I feel like that's why Sundance was built. It was built for independent filmmaking. Now it's become so commercial. Same with, you know, some of the other bigger film festivals. So I love that you're kind of willing to just put it out on social media first to let it do its run, to get its, you know, fans and exposure and kind of go that route. Because it's not easy. It's definitely like such a hustle just to get a film seen and, you know, excited by buyers, you know?
Well, but there's also, like we said, like Tubi, there's also other platforms, you know, I mean, you're old enough to know. I mean, remember when Netflix, it was pretty easy to get onto Netflix. Well, now Netflix and Amazon are producing their own product.
Yep.
So you're competing against their own, and it's all tech, you know, it's all digital tech stuff. So you're like, wow. So where do we go now? Because, like, again, kids want to see a new story. They don't want to see the same story rebottled in a different flavor. And only independents have the balls to tell their own story.
That's very true. Very
and
true.
That's why I go, do it. Put it out there, good, bad, and ugly. Get it out there. You know, I mean, the fact that we all had compassion for the homelessness crisis, and especially in LA, the fact that we were willing to put that up on the screen, people go, wow. You know, I mean, nobody wants to talk about homelessness. So
right.
Hey, we'll talk about it in a way that it's in your face.
Well, it's good because it's like, it's touching on delicate issues.
Yeah.
Like things that are taboo to talk about. And yet it's putting a spotlight on it in a way that it's like, we should know about these kind of levels, the depths of what these issues are really like proving to be, you know?
Yeah, and we can't say that these people, I mean, I don't want to get political, but we can't say that there's anything bad about these people.
Right.
We can't put them in that bad category. We can't do that to them.
Yeah, I feel like society should take the tribal approach to kind of, you know, how to run a society, because tribes don't let anybody in the tribe fall to the deepest despair levels. You know, it's like they just, there's something that I love in the Kenyan, the Maasai tribes. Like if somebody does bad in the tribe, the whole tribe, gathers around them, yeah, and they start telling the person great things about them to like reinforce, oh, right, them, which is like such an amazing, like, right, you don't have, right, that in American, yeah, society or in, you know, public society, yeah, worldwide. It's not, it's the opposite. It's like, oh, if somebody does wrong, you're going to shame them and kind of like judge them to the point where they're going to fall deeper into despair. So it's weird that, like, you know, we've fallen out of this mentality to take care of the lowest dregs of society and kind of bring them back into a higher level of society, because that raises the vibration for all of us. But people, yes, don't think like that because, you know, I think, you know, I asked a friend, I said, what do you think is the cure to end, you know, to finding world peace? And he said, ending social classes. And I said, wow, you don't think about that, but it's like, because everybody wants to make sure they're in a certain, you know, hierarchy of society, that allows somebody to be in the lowest part of society, and that allows somebody to be in the top part of society. And that's where the control starts. I mean, it's really kind of an interesting and fascinating thing when you think about, yeah, it, because it's layered like that. And the homeless, well, epidemic right now is bad, especially in Los Angeles or any major,
well,
city.
I'll tell you, don't believe everything you hear on the news. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
I mean, people talk. I mean, I have people call me from Europe and go, oh, my God, is L.A. burning? And I'm like, you know.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of that. Well, it's because people are trying to get, you know, fans and views and, you know, like becoming influencers. That's a big part of a lot of fake news that's being kind of perpetuated, too.
Yes.
Everybody's looking for viewership. You know what I mean? And it's like it's taken over like facts or, you know, taking over, you know, just the real in humanity. I have a lot of friends that ask the same thing. They're like, oh my God, is all of this stuff happening in LA? I'm like, no, it's not like that at all. So don't worry. And we're fine. And everything's cool. It's just certain parts of the city. And what I really love about cities like LA and New York, it's like those things can be happening, but it doesn't rock the boat of the city so far that the city doesn't keep moving forward. And that's like a powerfully beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah. But I do want to say something you said. And I said, I worked in South Central for 20 years.
Wow.
And I ran an industrial staffing company. And you know what? Most of my, I would say 90% of my workers were Hispanics. And probably out of that, 85 of them were probably illegals.
Wow.
And it was before it was, you know, fashionable or whatever. And I go, you know what? Best people in the world.
Yep.
And you know what? They're not even trying to get rich, or they're just trying to
survive. They're just trying to survive.
No, they're trying to just be responsible. They're
right.
They understand, they're willing to work hard. They're willing to do jobs that I don't know anybody in this country would do.
Right.
And I'll say that out loud.
Yeah.
But all in all, they don't want to be wealthy. They don't They don't want to have our high class problems.
Right.
They don't want the stress. They want to be able to just, you know, appreciate a homemade tortilla. You know.
Right.
I don't think most of them would even buy store bought tortillas.
Right.
But I mean, these are people that appreciate a home cooked meal. You know, right, that loved that, and they love their families, and they watch over their kids.
Right.
And people, I said, you know, because I'm a widow. So I raised my daughter by myself. And I go, you know, people said, I said, you know, one of the things I learned in South Central, there's two kinds of people, the ones that watch over their kids and the ones that don't.
Right.
And that's- so I always knew where my daughter was. I always, even if I was working, I knew she had somebody watching over her, or if I couldn't be there. And you gotta keep track of your kids.
Right.
That's and important. Yeah. And, you know, cause we're, you know, I'm out on the coast in Malibu, and, you know, I see a lot of parents that aren't raising their kids.
Right.
And it's really, and I go, you know, I really would rather be where the love is.
I love that. Well, let's put a spotlight. Where can people find your film if they want to watch it?
Right now it's on Tubi for free. So please watch it.
And then what do they, just go to Tubi and search for Healing Towers. Is that right?
Healing Towers. Yes. On Tubi for free. Yeah.
Awesome. And then how long is it on Tubi for? Is it on for a couple of years?
You know, I don't know. I would probably say to the end of the year at least.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. I always know there's like a finite amount of time with all those, you know.
Well, the streaming services are working quarterly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Really? Why? That's because they just want to keep getting new content?
I think because they work in blocks, so they'll put a certain amount up every quarter, and they have to work in some kind of system. You know, I mean, I'm sure it probably has to do with accounting.
You're probably right. Well, Ezra, I look forward to many more movies that you produce. Hopefully it'll also inspire you to get behind and in front of the camera for the next one. Do you have any plans to act in the future or no?
I don't know. We've got another thing. We're starting to work on a limited series called Fleshing, and with another smaller streaming service called Geo. So we are working, and we also have another project up on Hollywood Diversity.
Okay.
And I think that's also on might be on Tubi now also, but I know it's also on Geo, and we're starting to get more because of these independent streaming services, we're starting to be able to get more of our content out there.
That's awesome. That's the way it should be. That's definitely the way it should be.
Yeah. And I mean, and see what people like, you know, I mean, we got so much, you know, sequels shoved down our throats. It's like, let kids decide what they like. It's amazing what they like on TikTok. It really is. And it's all the really real stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's great. You know, let's really put real life into these movies that people can identify with.
I love that. Well, you know what? I want to first say thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Your movie looks awesome. I'm definitely going to watch it. I'm definitely going to shoot you an email and say I loved it, because I know I'm going to love it. And I'm going to get the cliffhanger too. I'm going to send it to you and be like, this really threw me off, because it just looks like it has a lot, not just one or two. It really looks like it's going to take the viewer on a roller coaster of thrills and chills, you know? So thank you for producing this film. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Check out Andrea's film, Healing Towers
on Tubi.
Yes. Tubi, right? Isn't that the right way to spell it? Tubi?
Tubi.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Yeah. On behalf of Samuel, myself, and Andrea, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.